Since April of 1985, this is the DX Audio Service.
DX Audio Service, National Radio Club.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for November 2014. This is issue number 358. I'm your host, Fred Bobe. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805. My email for general inquiries is fvobe, that's F-V-O-B-B-E, at realoldiesradio.com. My telephone number for short calls is 419-228-6223. Keep in mind that I'm on the road a lot, so your call may not be returned as fast as you might like. Also, when you leave information on the answering machine, please speak slow and distinctly, because I cannot rewind the recording to listen again for a telephone number. A yearly subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S. Canadian members is $30. To subscribe or renew, make a check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that is mentioned, or you can log on to the website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using PayPal. If you're on the internet, you can sign up to EDXN and get your DX Audio Service in MP3 format for download. A subscription for EDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with PayPal. But subscribe only if you're able to download and navigate a website without anyone else's assistance. Longtime Board of Director member Ken Chatterton has submitted his resignation from the National Radio Club's Board of Directors, citing health as the reason. And we're now searching for a replacement. Ken has been active in the club since the early 1950s, and in 1980, he joined club leadership when he volunteered to take over the Publication Center. Shortly after that, he was appointed to the Board of Directors and later served as chairman. You'll be greatly missed for your wit, wisdom, and patience, Ken. Any club member in good standing may apply to be a member of the Board of Directors. You'll need to have internet access and reliable email plus a phone, as most of the communications are accomplished very quickly and not via snail mail. To apply, send a short statement as to how long you've been a club member and why you wish to volunteer to become a Board of Director member to Board of Director Chairman Paul Swearingen, PLSBCBDXER at AOL.com. You must do this before December 15th.
This is the AM Switch.
Welcome to the November edition of AM Switch. On this edition, we have two issues, which are volume 81, issues number 1 and 2. Let's start out with call letter changes. There's only one to report. 1490 WMOG, Brunswick, Georgia, changes to WBGA as of September 8th. Let's take a look at the new station watch, with changes from the auction 84 winning applications. The application for 1500 in Culver City, California, is going through some changes. The original application at the time it won the bid was for U4 25 kilowatts day and 1,000 watts at night. After winning the bid, the applicant filed a full application for U4 1 kilowatt day, 2 kilowatts night from a different site. Now the applicant amends the application to U4 120 watts day and 180 watts night from a shared site with KWKW 1330 and KFOX 1650. New stations on the air. 890 KMJE Olivehurst, California is on the air with their construction permit with U4 10 kilowatts day, 480 watts at night. Construction permits canceled and deleted. The CP for 1020 in Star, Idaho for a new station, U2 10 kilowatts day, 460 watts night, has been canceled and deleted. And the saga of WWAM 640, CP for Piatone, Illinois, continues. This moved from Terre Haute, Indiana in May with the plan to take co-owned WMFN 640 Zeeland, Michigan off the air. Then, shortly before the new station CP expired, on July 29th, the owners applied to simply move the WMFN 640 to Piatone, Illinois, using the U4 4,500 watts day and 1,200 watt night CP facilities. Normally, a move of this distance or a reapplication of another new station construction permit would not be possible outside a new station auction application window. Now it turns out that the planned tower site isn't available, so the licensee has modified the WMFN application to U4, 4,400 watts day, 1,600 watts night, at a site located just south-southwest of Piatone, which is about 40 miles south-southwest of Chicago. The patterns shoot north-northeast into Chicago while protecting WOI in Ames and WHLO in Akron, as well as signals to the south. But wait, we received late word that the CP for this new station has been canceled as of September 29th. Three pending new station CPs have October 2014 expiration dates on them, 1550 Midland, Texas, 1570 Fritch, Texas, and 1590 Paradise, Nevada, with a pending application to move to Enterprise, Nevada. Since none have applied for call letters, with a month or less to go, odds are they'll all expire unbuilt. These stations are going dark. 1240 WTHE Thermopolis, Wyoming. The license was voluntarily surrendered on September 8th. And the same goes for 1560 KKUZ, Salisaw, Oklahoma. Their license expired on June 1st, 2005, and is only now deleted from the FCC database. Construction permits for existing stations. CPs now on the air. 870 KPRM Park Rapids, Minnesota's CP for U2, 50,000 watts day and 1,000 watts night. They're on. So is 1140 WCJW Warsaw, New York, the CP for D4, 8,000 watts day and critical hours power of 2,300 watts. 1330 WEBY Milton, Florida, the CP for WEBY's new pattern is on the air. 1390 WTNL Reidsville, Georgia's CP for U1, 275 watts day and 35 watts night is on. I think we have a member in Reidsville, and it would be helpful to know if WTNL's signal is any better than it was before the CP. 1590 WCGO Evanston, Illinois' construction permit for U2, 10 kilowatts day and 2,500 watts at night is also on. CP's nearing final licensing. 960 WFIR Roanoke, Virginia applies for license to cover their CP for U4, 10 kilowatts day, 5 at night from a new site for day operation co-located with WVBE 610. 970 KCFO Tulsa, Oklahoma applies for program test authority to use their new pattern. 1460 KHOJ St. Charles, Missouri granted program test authority for a CP with U4, 12,000 watts day and 210 watts night. 1590 WARV Warwick, Rhode Island applies for license to cover their CP for U4, 8 kilowatts day and 5 kilowatts night, and for program test authority. These CPs have been granted. 1240 WLLV Louisville, Kentucky granted a CP for U1, 530 watts day and night from a new site. 1460 WRAD Radford, Virginia granted a CP for U1, 5,000 watts day and 37 watts night. 1560 WMBH Joplin, Missouri U1, 500 watts day, 35 watts night from a new site. And 1700 KKLF Richardson, Texas granted a CP to consolidate operations at their existing night site, remaining U1, 10 kilowatts day and 1 kilowatt night. An amendment to a pending application, couple actually. 600 WBOB Jacksonville, Florida amends their CP to U4, 50,000 watts day and 9,700 watts night. And 1360 WKAT North Miami, Florida has an application for U1, 9 kilowatts day and 400 watts night from a new site, which is the tower of WOCN 1450. WKAT now amends that application to U1, 9,300 watts day and 400 watts night. New applications filed down in Mike Lance territory. 560 WQIM Miami applies for U4, 4,100 watts day and a kilowatt at night from a new site, which just happens to be the WOCN 1450 tower, same as WKAT 1360's application we just spoke of. According to Fred Bowlby's interpretation of the coordinates, that puts all three stations between Northeast 70th and 71st Streets by Northeast 4th Street between Miami and North Miami. It's a little piece of land, so it'll be interesting to see how they make 560 work. 1030 KFAY, Farmington, Arkansas, applies for U4, 6,000 watts day, 1,000 at night. 1100 WISS, Berlin, Wisconsin, applies for D4, 50 kilowatts day and 20 kilowatts critical hours. 1480 WSAR, Fall River, Massachusetts, applies for U4, 25,000 watts day and 5,000 watts night to replace an existing but expired CP. Construction permits expired and deleted. 1410 KCAL, Redlands, California, their CP for U4, 3,000 watts day and 2,200 watts night, changing the city of license to Grand Terrace, California, has expired and is now deleted. 1550 WCSJ, Morris, Illinois, the CP to move the station to Roanoke, Illinois, with D3, 300 watts, has expired and is deleted. In addition, the FCC has made changes to the database to show WFSI 860 Baltimore, Maryland is D3, 2,500 watts, not U4, 2,500 day and 66 watts night. They also show KXXA 1520 Snohomish, Washington as U2, 50 kilowatts day and night, and not U6. And they show KHPY 1670 Moreno Valley, California, as U4, 10,000 watts day and 9,000 watts night, not U1. Now let's take a look at Special Temporary Authority 840 WHGH, Thomasville, Georgia, forgot to apply for license renewal, so they had their license canceled last year. They were operating with an STA while their late-filed renewal application was pending, but then they forgot to ask for an extension. That explains why the FCC added WHGH to its silent list without any notification from the station that they'd gone silent, per our question a few issues back. Well, now WHGH has caught the error, and they're asking for another STA to broadcast while the matter is resolved. 950 KJTV, Lubbock, Texas, granted special temporary authority with U4, 3,000 watts day and 500 watts night. Their transmitter needs a part. 960 WHYL, Carlisle, Pennsylvania, granted an STA with U1, 20 watts day and night from a temporary long wire antenna. WHYL lost their licensed tower site and plans to apply to move to the WCAT-FM site, but has been silent for almost a year and needs to get back on the air quickly to preserve the license. This silent station is now back on the air. 960 WATS, Sayre, Pennsylvania, granted an STA with U1, 4,000 watts day and 50 watts night due to transmitter repairs. 1,000 WCCD, Parma, Ohio, granted an STA with D1, 125 watts, as their tower site was vandalized on September 21st overnight. 1160 WYLL, Chicago, Illinois, granted an STA with U3, 50 kilowatts day and 12,500 watts night using the day site and day pattern 24 hours a day. WYLL has one site for day and another for night, and the night transmitter is malfunctioning. The day pattern is a cardioid from Des Plaines, southeast through Chicago, so those of you in southern Ohio, Virginia, and south have a good shot at this now. Their normal night pattern is due north. 1290 KAZA, Gilroy, California, granted an STA with U1, 1,250 watts day and 20 watts night from the KZSJ 1120 site. KAZA has lost their licensed tower site. 1360 WHNR, Cypress Gardens, Florida, is granted an STA with U1, 1,250 watts day, 625 watts night, due to power repair, so this silent station has returned. 1370 WLLN, Lillington, North Carolina, applies for an STA with U4, 1,000 watts day, 49 watts night, as their transmitter was damaged and there's no money to fix it, they say. 1420 KSTN, Stockton, California, granted an STA with U1, 1,250 watts day, 250 watts night. KSTN is rebuilding their phasing system. 1460 WPON, Walled Lake, Michigan, granted an STA with D1, 25 watts from a temporary wire antenna. We'll have more on them in just a moment. 1470 KWSL, Sioux City, Iowa, is granted an STA with U1, 1,450 watts day and night. They lost three of their four towers in a tornado. 1480 KLMS, Lincoln, Nebraska, granted an STA with parameters at minor variance. 1500 WASN, Youngstown, Ohio, granted an STA with D1, 125 watts, critical hours power, 63 watts. That puts this formerly silent station back on the air. 1590 WARV, Warwick, Rhode Island, granted an STA with parameters at variance. Silent stations. These are stations informing the FCC they're silent, and they include 590 WARM, Scranton, Pennsylvania, silent as of September 15th due to transmitter failure. 1250 KDEI, Port Arthur, Texas, has been silent since September 19th as a module in their transmitter burned out. 1350 WCBA, Corning, New York, has been silent since September 15th for financial reasons. Here's an update on 1460 WPON in Walled Lake, Michigan. After filing for an STA with 25 watts from a long wire antenna, this station is silent again, but quoting the application, hopes to have construction permit built within 6 months. It seems this licensee has a lot of hopes. 1540 WJZI Decatur, Indiana is silent since a storm rolled through the area on September 14th and lightning struck the transmitter. 1560 WQXY Hazard, Kentucky, silent since August 1st after the station was sold, but they still need to lease a new tower site. 1600 WPDC Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, is silent for financial reasons. Back from the dead, these formerly silent stations have informed the FCC they are no longer silent. 710 WUFF Eastman, Georgia, went silent September 23, 2013, and is now back on the air as of September 23rd this year. 1060 WHFB, Benton Harbor, St. Joseph, Michigan, has been on the air since September 2013, as reported in DX News, but forgot to notify the FCC. This has now been rectified. 1080 WALD, Johnsonville, South Carolina, was silent since August 30th last year, but they're back on as of August 11th, according to a member's report. Thank you for that. 1200 WEMM, Huntington, West Virginia, was silent since July 12th of this year, but came back to life August 29th with an STA. 1240 KNSN, San Diego, California, silent since July 25th, back on the air as of the end of September. 1410 WYIS, McRae, Georgia, has been silent since September 24th, 2013, and is back as of September 24th this year. 1490 WTQS Cameron, South Carolina, was silent since September 5th, 2013. They're back on the air as of August 26th, according to a member's report. That little bell you hear is not the Salvation Army guy with a kettle, but the FCC's cash register at work. WCMC 1230 Wildwood, New Jersey, has been fined $10,000 for failure to maintain an enclosure around its tower. And WMID 1340 Atlantic City, New Jersey, fined $20,000 for failure to paint and light the tower. Both WCMC and WMID have the same owner. KIUL 1240 Garden City, Kansas, fined $7,000 for tower fence violations, but they had the fine reduced to $5,600. In addition, the license of KELG 1440 Manor, Texas, and KTXZ 1560 West Lake Hills, Texas, and KOKE 1600 Pflugerville, Texas, have agreed to pay $2,000 to settle claims with respect to their failure to file timely license renewal applications in April of 2013 and continuing to broadcast after the licenses expired on August 1st last year. The license renewals for all three stations have now been granted. Oh, Canada! It was a quiet summer at the CRTC, but our neighbors to the north are back. 570 CFCB Corner Brook, Newfoundland has been granted a CP for 10,000 watts day and 1,000 watts night, but no antenna information was provided. Their file indicates this station is non-directional. There is a CP for 700 in Calgary, Alberta, granted for a new station with U4, 50,000 watts day and 20,000 watts night, with a gospel format. This is actually a regrant of a permit that expired a year or so ago. 960 CKNT, Mississauga, Ontario, has been granted an amendment for a new station CP. CKNT is not yet on the air, but data seems to indicate they will be, with U1 700 watts day and 104 watts night from a new site west-southwest of Toronto. 1250 CJYE Oakville, Ontario, applies for U3, 10,000 watts, day and night. 1320 CJMR, Mississauga, Ontario, applies for U3, 10,000 watts, day and night. And 1690 CHTO, Toronto, Ontario, is granted a CP for U1, 6,000 watts, day, 1,000 watts, night, and critical hours power of 3,000 watts. Before we go, Mark Durenberger and Fred Volby are going to help us out translating all the antenna codes on part two of the DX audio service. If you've ever wondered what U4 or N1 might mean, Mark and Fred will explain it all. So with thanks to Sean Axelrod, Bill Hale, Bruce Conti, Steve Francis, Terry Kruger, Tim Noonan, Kevin Redding, Fred Volby, and Frank Welch, that's our AM switch for November. Remember, you can help us out with the AM switch column if you notice a format change, a station gone silent, or a silent station coming back on the air. Please call the Musings line at 419-741-0205 and let us know. The membership will be grateful for your information. Till the December issue, Dave Alpert in Southern California wishing you a happy Thanksgiving and hoping you'll have a chance to hit the dials this fall and report to us. Till next time. 73 and good DX.
Thank you, Dave. And we now begin part two of our State of the Stations Minneapolis. If you were here for part one, you remember how the WDGY calls were being batted around the market. And when we pick up here, it's at 1130 kilocycles when it began life as the stepchild of Dr. George Young. This is where the WDGY call letters spent most of their broadcast life. Dr. Young went through a number of call letter ideas until the government told him to cut it out, then settled on WDGY, the call letters reflecting his name. The station kept the WDGY calls until 1991. WDGY operated on 8 frequencies by the time it settled on 1180 AM. It made its final move to 1130 in 1941 as part of NARBA. In 1942, the station gained approval to broadcast at night. In the early years, the station shared time with at least 4 local stations. When it fully developed its facilities, it built a vast 9-tower array on land that would eventually succumb to developers because of its value. During its heyday, it was one of the first in the country to program rock and roll music in a top 40 format. That was in 1956 by Todd Storrs, one of the pioneers in programming to the baby boom generation, with music that had heretofore been rarely heard on white radio stations. Storrs stations were heavy on promotion, headline-grabbing contests, and high-profile DJs, usually using echo chamber microphones. Other Twin Cities station owners resented the attention WDGY was receiving, but soon they too jumped on the top 40 bandwagon. Later, they admitted that the Todd Storrs they often disparaged may very well have saved radio at a time when television was stealing its audience. From about 1955 to 1977, the station played popular music and was one of the most popular stations in the area, primarily competing for music listeners with KSDP 1500 and KDWB 630, though WCCO 830 was the major force of the day with a mixture of music talk and farm reports. DGY changed to a country music format in 1977, around the time when most music stations began shifting onto the FM band. The country format continued until 1989, when it became News Talk 1130 WDGY. The talk format gradually morphed into a sports talk format, and the calls were changed to KFAN in 1991. Following this change, the WDGY call letters were adopted by KDWB for the 630 frequency, as we heard. KFAN 1130 experienced severe storm damage in April 2004 at its transmission site when 4 out of the 9 towers at its new site were blown down. DXers had a lot of fun with 1130 during the rebuild days before the station resumed its authorized power and pattern. In 2011, owner Clear Channel announced a two-way frequency swap that would move their FM Talkers format to 1130, while the KFAN 1130 sports format would move to FM. Today, the talk format on 1130 is branded as KTLK News Talk AM 1130, and it enjoys moderate success. Now we jump to 1280, and that signal, now known as WWTC, is one of the oldest in the Twin Cities area. Since its inception, the station has gone through many formats, call letters, and ownership changes, like just about everyone else. The station began as WRHM in 1925. In 1927, it shared time for a few months with WDGY. By 1930, it had operated on at least 3 frequencies, 1140, 1150, and 1250, where it stayed until Narba, when it moved to 1280 permanently. WRHM was purchased in 1934 by a Twin Cities newspaper group, and the call changed to WTCN. They began broadcasting in high fidelity on WTCN from a new transmitter and single tower in the North Metro until 1962, when the station's transmission facilities were moved to the other side of the expanding Twin Cities Metro using a directional antenna. WTCN was sold to Time Life Broadcast in 1957, and in 1964, the station was purchased by Buckley Jager, who changed the call letters to WWTC, Worldwide Twin Cities. Over the years, WWTC had a number of formats, including the distinction of being the Twin Cities' first all-news radio station, using NBC's ill-fated news and information service, beginning in June 1975. In 1979, WWTC switched to an oldies format known as the Golden Rock and achieved its highest ratings in years, in spite of notable mismanagement. During its Golden Rock days, WWTC might have been the only Twin Cities station with an attorney on staff moonlighting as a disc jockey. Ironically, during its oldies years, WWTC claimed to be the first commercial station in the Twin Cities to play music from local favorite Prince. The Golden Rock format fizzled after a few years, and the station went through a long string of format changes. In 1984, they adopted a unique, locally oriented urban contemporary alternative rock hybrid format called Metro Music. That ended in 1985, and following a month of Top 40 Adult Contemporary, an ill-fated all-weather format made its debut. The automated format was not successful. It was sometimes heard playing the day's forecast for sunny weather, while a storm was overtaking the area, and Weather Radio 1280 was blown out after 10 months. The ghost of Weather Radio, however, in name at least, lived on in the following two formats. Sunny 1280 was next, a 16-month run with nostalgia and with new call letters, KSNE in 1986. In 1987, the station became known as The Breeze, taking a satellite feed of an early and more diverse form of what is now known as smooth jazz. In 1988, the station switched back to the WWTC call letters and a second run with the Golden Rock format. WWTC was sold to Christopher Dahl in 1990 and relaunched in May as the flagship of Radio Oz, a new radio network which would primarily air children's music. It would soon face competition from Disney. Despite being a marketing partner for Radio Oz, Disney would launch their own competing radio network, Radio Disney. Finding it difficult to compete. Dahl sued Disney for breaching their agreement with the network, and the Radio Oz network would be shut down in January 1998. Children's Broadcasting enlisted longtime area programmer, DJ, and unlicensed broadcaster Alan Freed. Not the Alan Freed you're thinking of, folks. He provided interim programming for the 10 stations of the Children's Radio Network until they could be sold. Freed, in addition to having worked at WWTC twice during its Golden Rock era and Metro Music periods, had set up a pirate radio station in downtown Minneapolis in 1996, broadcasting electronic dance from his apartment. Beat Radio, his latest creation, aired across Children's Broadcasting stations beginning in 1998, between the shutdown of Radio Oz and the final approval of a sale of the stations in late 98 to a company planning to run a syndicated service called Catholic Family Radio. When Catholic went bankrupt in 2000, that company sold its stations, including WWTC and sister station KYCR 1570, to Salem Communications. On March 19, 2001, the station was branded The Patriot. It remains the current format. WLOL at 1330 is a Heritage 5-kilowatt full-timer. Through the market's call-swapping dances over the years, the call letters are appearing on the station for the second time after a trip around the market. WLOL's history is intertwined with many other local frequencies over the years. The first incarnation signed on at 1300 AM in 1940 and moved to 1330 a few months later as part of the 1941 Narva swap. Over the years, most of the Twin Cities' best talent worked at WLOL. One of its most famous alumni was James Arness, the star of TV's Gunsmoke. The station aired a variety of formats, including Top 40 in the mid-1950s. In the early 1970s, WLOL ran a talk format with a three-hour morning news block. By 1977, the station was running country music. In 1979, it became WRRD 13 Rock, which prided itself as an anti-disco station. This would be the last time the station had a music format. The station became Minnesota Public Radio's KSJN in 1980. Then in 1989, the call letters were changed to KNOW, and it became the flagship for NPR's new news and information network. After 6 years of simulcasting NPR's KNOW-FM, it became WMNN in 1995, the flagship of the commercial Minnesota News Network. WMNN was sold in 2004 to Starboard Broadcasting, which turned it into Relevant Radio, a Catholic religious format. Between 1991 and 2004, the WLOL name was used by several other stations, including 1470, 100.3 FM, and 105.3 FM. The call sign returned to the original 1330 AM frequency in 2004. This time, however, instead of standing for Land of Lakes, as it did originally, it stands for Lady of Lourdes, reflecting Relevant Radio's Catholic mission. Now, a further tale of call letter swaps. Local Graveyard Channel 1400 came up as WMIN 1370 in 1936 and was reassigned to the 1400 kHz frequency under Narva. For many years, the station's transmitter and single tower have enjoyed an enviable location in the center of the metro area. In 1954, the call sign for 1400 briefly changed to WMNS, reflecting a change to a full-service format of music, news, and sports. The format remained, but the station returned to being WMIN later that year. As WDGY, WLOL, and KDWB enjoyed success playing Top 40 music in the late 1950s, WMIN joined the fray, but their inferior signal on this graveyard channel made it tough to compete at night. In 1962, WMIN adopted an all-news format, adopting the KTWN call letters the following November. They were changed back to WMIN the following August. They started to play country music and adopted the format full-time in 1967. Call sign change again in 1972 to KEEY to match that of their sister FM station with a soft rock format. By 1981, the station was into beautiful music. The call letters were changed again to KLBB in 1982, with a staff consisting of many former employees of WCCO Radio. They aired a full-service format consisting of talk, big band, and MOR music. Cargill Communications purchased KLBB in 1993. The new owners were uncomfortable with dropping the much-loved MOR format, so they kept it, updated the music, imaging and promotion and logo of the station, and simulcast KLBB's programming on 1470 AM Brooklyn Park to improve signal coverage to the north and west. The WLOL call letters, well known in the market from their original home on 1330, were retained by the company and moved to 1470. KLBB 1400, along with WLOL 1470, eventually separated once again from their FM sisters. In 1999, the owners donated both KLBB and WLOL, soon to be renamed KLBP 1470, to Minnesota Public Radio, where the two frequencies became part of the for-profit Minnesota News Network, MNN. The stations continued the standards format. In 2004, Minnesota Public Radio sold off MNN and the statewide network's flagship AM station, WMNN, but retained KLBB and KLBP for the time being. By now, the Club 14 simulcast, 1400 and 1470, was carrying a mix of local personalities and the Music of Your Life radio network. NPR announced in 2005 that it had reached an agreement to sell both KLBB and KLBP. KLBB acquired a Spanish-language format, while the format on KLBP 1470 remained MOR until 2006. Wow, are you following all of this? Ah, dear. Well, KLBB finally transitioned to its long-promised Spanish-language format in 2005 and bringing to an end the longtime Club 14 simulcast. The KMNV call letters were assigned to 1400 in 2005, just months after its switch to regional Mexican, while the KLBB call letters moved to its sister station, AM 1470. Take a deep breath now. We're almost done with the call letter swaps. Following 1470's switch to gospel, the KLBB call letters and much of its programming were picked up by Stillwater, Minnesota-based WMGT 1220 in 2006. The former WMIN call sign was located for many years at 10:30 a.m., as we heard, then at 7:40 a.m. in the Twin Cities, until the call WMIN was picked up by AM 1010 in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota. KMNV 1400 now airs La Raza, a Spanish-language music and entertainment format. Its signal is no better. The story of 1400 is awfully complicated for a graveyard station, methinks. All right, on we go to 1440. KDIZ, a poorly performing AM operating from the western suburbs of the Twin Cities, airing Radio Disney, and it will be until its demise and sale. The station has been owned by the Disney Company, and those priceless Disney call letters have been with the frequency since 1996. The original 1440 call letters were KEYD, the station launched in 1948 by former management and advertisers of WDGY, who had become disenchanted with the owners of Ouija over the discontinuance of religious programming in favor of Todd Starr's rock and roll. The station was to be a new home for the spurned WDGY programming. KEYD had been playing country, and the call was changed to KEVE in June 1956. KEVE-FM signed on in 1962, and by October 1963, it was given the call letters KADM to match its AM sister, as the pair became known as Adam and Eve in the Valley. A gradual shift from country music to a mix of classical music, show tunes, and adult standards began in 1960 and was fully fledged by 1963. In 1964, the call letters for both stations became KQRS for Quality Radio Stations. In 1967, the stations began experimenting with freeform rock music from midnight to 5 a.m. every night via the Night Watch program, playing R&B, jazz, and psychedelic rock. The foray proved successful, and by the end of 1968, it became the full-time format. The two KQs were simulcast until 1982, when the AM briefly switched to an oldies format as KGLD before returning to the simulcast. FCC files show that the KGLD calls became effective in 1982, with the KQRS calls returning in 1984. The station again broke away from the simulcast in 1996, this time permanently when it became KDIZ, as one of the four initial affiliates of the new Radio Disney, the children's format that competed with WWTC 1280, then the flagship station of Radio Oz. This August, Disney put KDIZ and 22 other Disney radio stations up for sale in order to focus more on digital distribution of the Radio Disney network. KMNQ on 1470 was born in 1956, simulcasting 1400, as we know, and much of its modern history has already been told with what we just heard on about 1400. Over the years, the station carried various formats under the sign-on call letters KANO. It did album rock as K-Twin in 1979 and country music as KKKC in 1983. Later, it was KBCW, KZTG, and KRJJ. In 1991, the station became KBCW in its classic country iteration. Later formats included Mexican gospel music and, of course, simulcasting the formats of 1400. And that's what it's doing right now with La Raza from 1400. The 1470 frequency allotment allowed the station to increase its power from 1,000 watts to 5,000 watts full-time from three towers. The third of the 350 kilowatts in the Twin Cities is KSTP 1500, now 1500 ESPN Twin Cities. It's the flagship station of Hubbard Broadcasting. 1500 has an excellent signal across much of the western United States, but is difficult to hear at night just a few miles east of the tower due to its protection of WFED in Washington. KSTP's signal at 1500 is the product of a 1928 merger between two other Twin Cities stations, WAMD, where all Minneapolis dances, and KFOY. Each started broadcasting a few years earlier. WAMD went on the air for the first time in 1925, originally broadcasting live dance music from a local ballroom. It was claimed that this was the first radio station to be completely supported by running paid advertising. KSTP was an affiliate for the NBC radio network for much of its early existence. They programmed a full-service MOR radio format in the shadow of the similar WCCO. KSTP came up at 1460 and moved to 1500 in the Narva swap. Back to the formats. In 1973, they broke away from their longtime format and became one of four area stations at the time to program rock music top 40. As 15 KSTP, actually AM 1500, the music station, competing with WDGY, KDWB, and U100. The competition would eventually shake itself out, with outrageous rocker U100 dropping out after being sold in 1976, and then, as we said, WDGY switching to country music in 1977. As for up-tempo hit station 15 KSTP, it went from a tight top 40 format to leaning adult rock in 1978, to leaning adult contemporary in 1979, to evolving into adult contemporary slash talk by 1980 before it became a news talker in 1982. KSTP's image as news talk station AM 1500 KSTP lasted until 2010 when it switched to sports talk. In 2006, the station announced it would be the new flagship station for Minnesota Twins baseball. The Twins had been on rival WCCO since arriving in Minnesota in 1961. The switch caused inconvenience and dissent among some listeners, particularly in neighboring states and outstate Minnesota regions. Although KSTP is the state's second most powerful station, it must operate directionally at night, as we said. After all the KSTP brouhaha about coverage, the Twins expanded the number of network affiliates until moving the broadcast to its own station, K-Twin, in 2013. You might want to know that KSTP operates a Franklin antenna at 50 kilowatts during the day. This type of antenna considered the best radiator available. At night, the 50 kilowatts is switched to a three-tower directional system, pointing away from Washington and blanketing the West. On 1570, we find KYCR, another of three stations owned by Salem. The station signed on in 1961 as KUXL and has a long history of being a religious-oriented radio station. In the 60s and 70s, KUXL played gospel and R&B music prior to becoming full-time religion. During this period, and for many years after, the station was restricted to daytime operation. In the mid-1960s, the station hired Bob Smith, a.k.a. Wolfman Jack, who relocated from Del Rio, Texas, to run a mostly R&B format on 1570. There was some irony here, since 1570 is a Clear Channel Mexican frequency. Also at KUXL at the time were Art Hain, a.k.a. Fat Daddy Washington, and former KDWB personality Ralph Hall, a.k.a. Preacher Paul Anthony. It was this trio of broadcasters who took control of Border Blaster Station XERB in 1090 in Baja California in 1965. They operated the Big X from Minneapolis initially, then relocated to Southern California in 1966. KUXL was a rating success in the early 70s, operating an eclectic talk and music-based format, migrating into religious-based programming. In 1988, the call changed to KYCR. In 1994, KYCR was purchased by Children's Broadcasting, parent of the aforementioned Radio Oz, becoming a sister to Oz flagship station WWTC 1280. KYCR regained its religious format after Radio Oz and was acquired by Salem in 1998. From 2002 until 2007, KYCR was a time-shifted version of WWTC The Patriot as The Patriot 2. The format was then changed to a general talk format with its own identity, known simply as The New Talk of the Twin Cities. The station attempted yet another format change on March 30, 2009, this time to an all-business format, carrying programming from the Bloomberg News Business Network. The station's slogan changed to Business 1570 Twin City's Business Radio, the current format. The station operates 3,800 watts day, 230 watts night from a non-directional antenna. And brothers and sisters, if you think I'm running out of voice, you are correct. That ends an expanded and certainly in-depth coverage of the state of the stations in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. We will return next month with more of the Bandscan. Until then, good listening, DXers. National Radio
Club. From our DX Change, Ernie Wesolowski has a Drake R8A receiver for sale. Power cord, original shipping box, and manual, but no speaker. Contact him at neerniew@yahoo.com. or area code 402-330-7758. Cost is $500, shipping included, from 13312 Westwood Lane, Omaha, Nebraska, 68144. Lots of people have been asking about the 2015 NRC WTFDA convention. Bids are now open for the 2015 NRC WTFDA convention. If you're interested in hosting a convention, you can get information on what you'll need to do and how to submit a bid form from Ernie Wesolowski, WESOLOWSKI, at 13312 Westwood Lane, Omaha, Nebraska, 68144-3543. Or you can email him at neerniew@yahoo.com. Be sure to do it quickly, as many people have to make plans before the end of the year. Having the information out as early as possible is how you get good attendance at the convention. From a press release, which we received here at the DX Audio Service, dated October 21st, 2014, Global 24 Radio LLC announced today that its inaugural broadcast will go live at 7 p.m. Friday, August 31st, with a lineup of new and well-known programs and around-the-clock English language programming. The broadcast can be heard 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on 9395 kHz on WRMI, broadcasting from Okeechobee, Florida. We're very excited about launching Global 24 and the important contributions it will make to shortwave radio listening. As both a medium worth preserving and a vital part of the modern media mix for so many listeners around the world, said Phil Workman, general manager of Global 24. Our broadcast will appeal to the dedicated shortwave listeners, the SWLs, all over the world looking for breaking news, opinion, and music. Global 24 aims to revitalize the shortwave medium by bringing general interest news and entertainment into sharper focus for listeners looking for high-quality programming on a daily basis. Regular listeners will be informed, entertained, and engaged in an ever more complex world. According to Jeff White, general manager of WRMI, Global 24 represents another step in the long overdue commercialization of shortwave radio. We are excited to be working with them on their ambitious program to engage and entertain a global audience. To finish out part one of the DX audio service, I thought I'd let you listen to something which is really kind of neat. It's from about 60 years ago. It's a record that Skip Dabblestein sent to us from the Hallicrafters Company, explaining what you can hear on your radio.
This is the sound of adventure, and I am Alex Dreyer, your man on the go, here to escort you on a most unusual trip around the fabulous, fantastic world of shortwave radio. Through the facilities and cooperation of the Hallicrafters Company, world's most respected name in communications, this limited edition recording will bring you a new dimension in history, in current events, in excitement and drama, the likes of which you may never before have experienced. So please turn on your imaginary shortwave set and join me now as we scan the bands for the voices of adventure, new words and new sounds, from outer space to Little America.
America.
From aircraft pilot to rock and roll. From a fishing boat captain to genuine Italian opera. Every sound authentically reproduced directly from actual shortwave broadcasts you might have heard in your own living room on a Hallicrafters shortwave receiver. For instance, here is an event that made the front pages of newspapers all over America last year, the dramatic capture of a desperate criminal named Richard Carpenter, who had shot a policeman in Chicago, Illinois. Through a sixth sense, known only to the best of newsmen, but field reporter literally was on the firing line with police during the capture, relaying the entire proceeding with a mobile shortwave transmitter. Listen closely now, and you'll hear the actual gunfire and the excitement that follows.
Those were the shots in front of 2048 Potomac. They have him up there now. The police are all crouched behind the cars. You can hear them firing at him now. Is he on the roof or is he in the building? He's in the third floor of the building. Is it Carpenter? It's Carpenter. Time is 11 minutes after 9.
They've got him.
They've got him. They're bringing him out now. They're taking him out now. Get out of the way, will you? Get out of the way. There's a terrific crowd around him. The police are trying to make a cordon around this man while they lead him away. The street is full of people. The police are walking here next to an officer with a submachine gun pointed in the air.
Of course, incidents like that don't occur on shortwave every night, thank goodness. On the other hand, you can tune in on the regular police broadcasts, and they make pretty exciting listening. You've heard it said that the only way to learn a foreign language is to live in a foreign country. Well, maybe so. But if someone in your family is a language student, the next best thing is shortwave radio. Twist the dial a few times any night, and a linguistic paradise is yours. In fact, every language spoken by man. Spanish.
Voy a cantar un himno que rica bendición.
Magnífico, Loida. Es un himno muy adecuado para cantarlo en este programa.
French.
Mon âme et mon âme surabonde. Nous verrons l'or et l'azur. Les ciels glacés dessinent la vraie lumière.
German.
Rudolf Stockhaus, Riem, Vatons.
And if you want a new twist on American jazz music, you might tune in your Hallicrafters receiver to something like this.
The junge rock and roll star. Eine eigene Komposition.
Whether time is critical to your business or you're merely fussy about details, Shortwave will bring you the National Bureau of Standards WWV exact time report periodically, 24 hours a day.
National Bureau of Standards WWV. When the tone returns, Eastern Standard Time is 8:55 p.m.
Everywhere we turn, we read about this modern air age of ours that thrives on a pace we earthlings can scarcely imagine. But with a Hallicrafter's shortwave receiver, it's a simple matter to get in tune, so to speak, with the men who live in the stratosphere, the pilots, and the tower control men who guide them. And here's just a sample.
Miami Air Force 17, Manor 7, that is affirmative. Air Force 12678, over.
Air Force 17, Manor 97, or Air Force 12678, Miami, roger, thank you.
Air Manor 7.
And here are some voices that were heard literally around the world not long ago when a group of radio amateurs aboard a globe-circling military plane talked to hundreds of amateur stations during Operation Worldwide.
W8OLJ Aeronautical Mobile, QRZ, this is Operation Worldwide. Around-the-world flight on military air transport plane C-54, 50564, calling CQ.
Yugoslavia calling YU-1 Able to simply nice to hook up with you there on that worldwide operation you have. The name here is Mirko, Mike Ida, Roger King Ocean, M-I-R-K-O. Mirko is the name and location is Belgrade, of course.
The YU-1AD, W-8OLJ. Okay, fine, Mirko. This is the FBM-200 is the transistorized helicopter transceiver. W-8AW, are you still on there? W-8AW, go ahead.
Back to Earth again. Down on the Gulf Coast, even a landlubber like me gets advance notice when the tuna fleet is coming home, if the wind's in the right direction. Fortunately, the canneries have much more accurate data, thanks to the modern miracle of powerful shortwave radio telephones aboard the boats. Most every night, you can pick up conversations like this.
I'm trying to do that. I mean, you could probably get a piece of inch and get it in there, and then you'd have to weld it pretty tight on the end of your drum to hold it to keep it from rattling around in there.
Fortunately for mankind, the sort of language you'll hear next is spoken infrequently, and America will not forget that it was spoken even once. On the 2nd of September 1958, Soviet jet fighters over Armenia shot down in cold blood an unarmed U.S. military transport plane, apparently having lured it over the border with fake radio beams. Its fate might never have been known, except for the alertness of shortwave monitors who actually tape-recorded the voices of Russian flyers taking part in the slaughter. Listen and remember. And if you've tired of Westerns on TV, try the shortwave bands any evening for a different kind of live dramatic fare, direct from Laos or Lucerne or London.
How many times have you seen Morrison and the deceased man talk together?
I did not take notice exactly, but 2 weeks before the crime, he was too much friendly with him. I saw him every night when I came from my work.
You gave evidence at the police court?
Yes.
Did you say this? I had known the prisoner about 2 months. He was friendly with Baron about 2 weeks before he was murdered. I have seen them a couple of times talking together. Is that correct?
In the United States alone, there are more than 185,000 amateur radio stations. They are operated by doctors, scientists, mechanics, even housewives, ordinary folks with a boundless curiosity, a spirit of adventure, and an urge to know and understand and help their fellow man. In times of disaster or emergency, in wartime or peacetime, radio amateurs provide a lifeline of communications where no other can exist. Recently, for example, a man in Evanston, Illinois, answered his telephone one evening and to his utter astonishment found himself talking to his brother at the South Pole. The conversation relayed by local radio amateur Marvin Eichhorst. Listen.
Carl, I was just wondering, I wonder if you could tell me something about the camp life down at the South Pole. And by the way, how's your weather conditions down there, Carl? It's on the mild side here in Chicago. Come in, please.
First, I will start off and say, well, I am about, I'm better than 10,000 miles there from Chicago, down here at Little America. And Little America is located about a mile and a half or 2 miles inland. It's located on Canaan Bay on the Ross Ice Shelf, on the Ross Ice Shelf. And we're on ice here. We're on ice that is about 800 feet thick. And the ocean measures about 2,000 feet deep under that.
And even on the amateur bands, the mind of woman is as wonderful and mysterious as ever.
Stay down there on Sanibel, over.
We stay at a perfectly wonderful place called the Island Inn, which we love dearly, and I think you would like it also. It's very simple. You wear shorts all day, and then maybe wear a cotton dress at night. We get up around 8. We go to bed around 9. Over.
Well, it just sounds divine.
As man's horizons broaden, not merely to other lands, but to other worlds, his communications lifeline must broaden too. For without communication, man would be totally lost in this universe. On the 11th of November, 1935, a United States Army balloon established a world altitude record of 73,395 feet into the stratosphere. Its name, Explorer 2. Shortwave receivers for the home were virtually unknown then. Otherwise, you could have heard this amazing three-way shortwave conversation between the late Captain Edwin C. Music, world-famous airline pilot, Captain A.W. Stevens aboard the balloon, and a newspaper reporter in London, England.
Can you hear me all right?
Oh, yes, perfectly.
How's everything going?
Well, everything's going all right. We're going down now. The altitude that we have at the present time, 30,000 feet now.
Hello, Captain Stevens.
Hello.
This is the Daily Telegraph, London.
This is Explorer 2.
Congratulations to you and Captain Anderson on your great achievement.
Thank you very much, sir. We're descending now a little too fast, and we're putting our ballast.
Oh, dear.
So I'll have to sign off, I believe, and get back to our duties. Thank you very much.
Hello, Captain Stevens.
Yes?
Just one more word. What about that rip in your balloon?
What about it?
Yes, what happened?
Well, we fixed it. It was a rent about 17 feet long.
Was it really?
I hardly need add that man's progress in the quarter century since that historic event has been fantastic. The name of that gas-filled spaceship and the statistics are remarkably significant today. For in December of 1958, a new American Explorer, Explorer 4, was launched. And from a height of not 14, but nearly 1,000 miles, you could have heard on a shortwave receiver the most dramatic message of hope and faith in modern history. The voice of the President of the United States, President Eisenhower.
This is the President of the United States speaking. Through the marvels of scientific advance, my voice is coming to you from a satellite circling in outer space. But through this unique means, I convey to you and to all mankind America's wish for peace on earth and goodwill toward men everywhere.
From outer space to Timbuktu, from pilot to sea captain, from overseas news to music in Rio de Janeiro, the great events of history and excitement of the moment are yours with the twist of a dial. You're in tune with the world, the amazing world of shortwave radio with a Hallicrafter's receiver.
More of the DX Audio Service for November on Part 2.
And the beat goes on.